For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Catherine Drew. Police in Paris have shot and injured a man who attacked an officer outside Notre Dame Cathedral. Tourists have been locked down inside the cathedral as FSN's Europe correspondent Elena Cassis reports from Brussels.
According to French media, a man attacked a police officer with a hammer outside Notre Dame Cathedral and was then shot by police and injured. Tourists were locked down inside the cathedral and police warned people to stay away from the area. If this does turn out to be an attempted terrorist incident, it would be the fourth attempted attack on police in Paris this year. Men apparently inspired by Islamist terrorism attacked security forces at the Louvre in February and at Orly Airport in March. Both were shot by police. 3 days before April's first round of the presidential election, a man inspired by ISIS shot officer Xavier Jugelet on the Champs-Élysées. France remains under a state of emergency, which new President Emmanuel Macron wants Parliament to extend until November.
The offensive to retake Raqqa from the so-called Islamic State has been launched by the US coalition-backed Syrian Democratic Forces. Western officials are increasingly concerned about Islamic State forces leaving the battlefield and returning home, as our US correspondent Priscilla Huff reports.
The goal of the operation to retake Raqqa is a decisive blow to the idea of the Islamic State as a physical caliphate. That's according to the U.S.-led coalition. The fight, being led up by Arab and Kurdish fighters of the Syrian Democratic Force, is expected to be long and difficult, says U.S. Commander Lieutenant General Steve Townsend. He added, the battle to retake Raqqa, and also Mosul in Iraq, has become even more important following the terror attacks on Manchester and London.
The Gulf state of Qatar says it will take part in talks with neighboring countries after six, including Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, cut ties with Doha, accusing the state of supporting terrorism. Kuwait, which is not involved in the dispute, has offered to mediate. Meanwhile, U.S. President Donald Trump has said he was told during his recent visit to Saudi Arabia that Qatar was funding radical ideology. The Metropolitan Police have named the third London Bridge attacker after reports surfaced in Italian media as 22-year-old Youssef Zagba, an Italian of Moroccan descent. Italian newspapers say he was stopped by authorities from travelling to Syria last year and reported to British intelligence services. From London, Natalie Powell reports.
Britain's Met Police say the third London Bridge attacker, 22-year-old Youssef Zagba, was not a subject of interest to police or intelligence services. Italian media is reporting he was stopped at Rome Airport last year en route to Istanbul, carrying a backpack and a one-way ticket. Authorities allegedly found religious content on him, however, nothing specifically relating to extremism. Natalie Powell, London.
From Bureaus Worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you very much, Catherine Drew, and a warm welcome to Tuesday's programme. To you, wet, windy and miserable blighty today, especially here in Manchester. Miserable old day it is. Got a terrific show lined up for you between now and the end of it. Between now and 9 p.m. Thanks for joining me.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. It's the Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
And just before coming on the air, I could hear George Galloway. George Galloway is in the neighbourhood, campaigning, no doubt, ahead of Thursday's general election. Welcome to the programme. Tweet at Richie Allen Show. Tweet me if you've got something to tell me between now and the end of the programme. Coming up this hour, the journalist, TV presenter and academic Marwa Osman is back on the programme. She's live, or will be live, from Beirut. We'll talk about the accusations being made against Qatar. Apparently, they fund and support terrorism. Who is accusing them of that? Well, states that fund and support terrorism. We'll talk about the recent terrorist attacks here, the ongoing situation in Syria, and much more besides. And coming up in the second hour, the musician and blogger Johnny Vedmore joins me. He wrote a very, very, very good piece for The Swamp recently about the life and times of Theresa May's father, Hubert Brazier. And it does seem that people connected to Theresa May, connected to the UK government, would prefer you didn't know too much about her father. Why is that? Well, I won't steal Johnny's thunder. He'll be with us in the second hour. We're live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, and TuneIn Radio, as well as richieallen.co.uk. That's where we're live. And I'm just going to jump straight in because there's a lot to tell you about. A lot to tell you about. Now, you might have heard, before I do that, though, davidicke.com /headlines, bookmark it. A lot of fascinating and important information on the website, especially in the lead up to the election on Thursday, and everything else as well. So get on there, bookmark the site. Now, you heard Catherine Drew on the news there. She said a man was shot outside the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris. Apparently he ran at a police officer with a hammer. Not the brightest of terrorists of all time, but he had a go. At least that's what the French police are saying. He allegedly said, "This is for Syria." He was wounded in the chest. The officer has minor injuries. Tourists fled for cover as the attack occurred. Hundreds of people were at the cathedral at the time. I wonder, is there any connection about the operation to retake Raqqa, about the claims made by the NATO countries that things are getting so bad now in Europe regarding terrorist attacks, we've got to stop these guys leaving the battlefield and heading for Europe. Is there a connection? We'll ask Marwa Osman when she joins us shortly. France is in a state of emergency since 2015. And the Rothschild-controlled, owned lockstock president, Emmanuel Macron, he wants to extend that state of emergency even further. That's all I can tell you, really, about the Notre Dame attack. Now, on the terrorism theme, Amber Rudd, the UK Foreign Secretary, speaking to the BBC today, acknowledged that, well, we can't really stop terrorism. People coming in, lone wolves, we can't stop them all. So get used to terrorism is the subtext, I suppose, of what she was saying.
We've always said that we have a really dangerous enemy, and the best way to try and defeat that enemy is both to work with the communities and to have a strong investment in our counter-terrorism and security services.
Lastly, is it possible to stop all suspects from getting through the net?
Unfortunately, it's not, which is why we've always been at severe, which means an attack is highly likely. But the fact is, until this past 3 months, we've had a lot of success at stopping a huge number of them. These past 3 months mean we've entered a different phase, which is why we need to do something differently.
It's interesting, they talk all the time about the amount of terrorist attacks that were imminent but were foiled by the security services. Again, in the absence of a genuine media, we don't know, because our presenters on national and commercial radio are not saying, who are the terrorists whom you foiled from attacking us here? Are they in custody? Have they been given a trial date? Are charges being prepared against them? Who are these people? But we don't get those questions. So we just have to take their word for it, that through their vigilance, they stopped us being attacked so many times before. Ultimately, take down the internet is where this is all going. We know this. Here is Theresa May speaking with Sky News' Faisal Islam. And again, the internet comes up.
MI5 and the police have already said after the Manchester attack that they would be looking and reviewing how they dealt with that. And I would expect them to do exactly the same in relation to London Bridge. What government needs to do, and what the government that comes in after Thursday's election needs to be willing to do, is to give more powers to the police and the security service when they need them, needs to deal with this issue of terrorism and extremism online, and also needs to be able to call out and deal with extremism here in the United Kingdom.
Yeah, so basically give as much power to the security services as they want, and tackle online extremism by privatising the internet and making international agreements. This is the stock answer, isn't it? This is the stock answer now from Theresa May. No questions about these terrorists who attacked the streets of London on Saturday night, and how the hell could they have been on national television in a programme called The Jihadis Next Door or something like that? How could these guys be openly causing trouble on the streets of London, unfurling ISIS flags, swearing their allegiance to ISIS, arguing with the police? How could those guys not be followed, not be tracked, and the result of that being that they were able to drive a van onto London Bridge, kill people, and then mosey on down the road and stab people to death? I've got a lot of problems with the narrative as to what happened on Saturday. But unlike some of the... Go easy now, Richie. Unlike some others who make comments on these things, I'm not in a position to make a judgment because I wasn't there, and I don't have access to the material gathered by the police. So I can only say I have suspicions. That's all I can do anyway. Do you know what I was thinking today, dear listener, my friend? I was thinking the drama, the media, the conduct of the presenters on Sky and BBC. Now, I know you're, I don't know if you're tired of hearing it, but I'm not going to, you know, dwell on it, but I'm going to from time to time drop it in there. Big story today, and it's a dreadful story. A woman called Sarah Zelenak, Z-E-L-E-N-A-K, it must be Zelenak, Sarah Zelenak. She's a young woman from Brisbane, and she's been missing in London since Saturday. Pretty dreadful for the family, I would have thought, and I can't imagine it. Now, they were speaking to the media today. They look pretty distraught, and they have no idea what's happened to their daughter. I hope she turns up safe. She might well do. But she might not, of course. Have a listen to Kay Burley from Sky News. So Burley introduces a Sky reporter who's in or at Borough Market in London. Okay? So Burley is linking two pieces of... Well, she's linking a soundbite of the family in Brisbane to a live reporter at Borough Market. So you're not going to hear the family, but Burley is listening to the family saying how much they are terrified, obviously, because they can't reach Sarah Zelenak. So that clip finishes, and then Burley hands over to a Sky reporter in Borough Market. Listen to the way she does that. This is your media.
My correspondent Charlotte Lomas is live for us at Borough Market, where the attack happened. And the more of these stories we hear, Charlotte, the more people realise that they were just young people out having a lovely Saturday night in a relaxed environment, and then three murderers came along and slashed their throats.
That's right, Kay. Extremely emotional scenes here at London Bridge as people are continuing to lay flowers there.
Yeah. The girl or the lady at the scene was stunned by Burley, was absolutely stunned. If you watch it back, you can see she was completely taken aback by the way Burley handed over to her. Listen to it again.
My correspondent Charlotte Lomas is live for us at Borough Market, where the attack happened. And the more of these stories we hear, Charlotte, the more people realise that they were just young people out having a lovely Saturday night in a relaxed environment, and then three murderers came along and slashed their throats.
The more people realise that they were just young people out having a good time on a Saturday night, and then three murderers came along and slashed their throats, said the completely insane Kay Burley. A psychopath, if ever one, walked the corridors of a national broadcaster in this country, Kay Burley. I've made the point before, I've juxtaposed many of her appearances with the Faye Dunaway character from the Sidney Lumet film Network. Psychopath. No questioning, no asking hard questions of anybody, just narrating a drama. The more people realise that they were just young people out having a good time on Saturday night, and then three murderers came up and slashed their throats. And the girl in Borough Market is like, what the fuck is that? Right. And then starts talking. That's your media, right? Leave that one alone. We've done that one to death, maybe. So the election is on Thursday. What are the odds? I'm going to do this live because they're changing all the time. Odds checker election. We're going to have a look at the odds for the general election, right? I'm convinced that something nefarious has been going on with respect to the conduct of the Conservative Party in the run-up to the election. Since the publication of their manifesto. Labour are 7-1 at the moment. The Conservatives are 1-9. Now that's to win the most seats, by the way. That's to win the more seats. But the odds are a little bit narrower when it comes to who will form a government. The Conservative Party still favourites, but Labour have come in to 4-1 to form the next government. And what's interesting about the odds, Conservatives 1-9 on to win the most seats of all the parties. 1-9 on. Labour 7-1. That's just to win the most seats. I can't figure this one out now. What is it? I see. There you go. That's right. They're shorter price to form a government. I think they are 7-4 or something like that. No, they're not. They're 4-7 or 5-6 to form a government, I think. But Labour are 4-1. So these odds have come down. And today, some polls are suggesting that there's only a half a percentage point or one percentage point between the parties. So it's very possible that we might get a shock on Thursday night, Friday morning, akin to the shock we got when Vote Leave carried the day last June, or when Trump won the election. And it's not beyond the bounds of possibility that Labour might form a coalition with either the Lib Dems and the SNPs or both on Friday at some stage. 17 minutes past the hour. Let me just tell you now that at some stage on Friday, David and I will do a programme reflecting on the result when we know the result. And that'll be live, okay? Can't tell you what time that'll be, but it'll be Friday morning or Friday afternoon early. I'll keep you posted. David and I will be doing a programme. Let me just scroll down there because I've lost the page with all the different markets for the election there. I can't get it back. Right, okay, look, it doesn't matter. Anyway, things are narrowing and it's looking good for Jeremy Corbyn today anyway. It's looking better than it was a couple of weeks ago. I'll give you a giggle or two. If you want, there's good news for those of us who voted for the UK to leave the Nazi EU. That good news is the great unwashed Bob Geldof has endorsed the Lib Dems. Yes, he has. Old Bob. Now, the election is about Brexit, said Bob. So for the first time in my life, said Bob, I'm voting for the Lib Dems. In typical sweary fashion, Geldof said they're the only party with the balls to oppose the government. Dirty bastard. Bob Geldof. So good stuff. Can't do the Lib Dems any good, really, him supporting them. They dropped 2 points in the polls almost immediately. No, they didn't. Now, US President Donald Trump has claimed credit for the pressure being placed on Qatar by their Gulf neighbours. Qatar is being accused of supporting terrorism in the region. Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, United Arab Emirates, Yemen, and the Maldives have all cut diplomatic and other ties with Qatar. Trump is claiming credit for this, saying his recent visit to the region brought about the unified stance against Qatar. Marwa Osman is standing by, will join me in a minute and we'll talk about that. And in other news, stateside, Nikki Haley, the United States UN ambassador, whom, if she had a brain cell, it would die of loneliness. She's been threatening the United Nations today about the US's future working relationship with the UN Human Rights Council. Why? Well, it's all about Israel. Have a listen to Nikki Haley today.
As you know, the United States is looking carefully at this council and our participation in it. We see some areas for significant strengthening, And later today, I will be speaking at the Geneva Graduate Institute and proposing ideas to make the Human Rights Council more effective, more accountable, and more responsive. In this session of the Council, it is crucial to adopt the strongest possible resolutions on the critical human rights situations in Syria, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Eritrea, Belarus, and Ukraine, and that it follow up to prevent further human rights violations and abuses in those countries. Being a member of this Council is a privilege, and no country who is a human rights violator should be allowed a seat at the table. Finally, it's hard to accept that this Council has never considered a resolution on Venezuela, and yet it adopted 5 biased resolutions in March against a single country, Israel. It is essential that this Council address its chronic anti-Israel bias if it is to have any credibility.
Oh, please, don't even get us started on that. They never give a second thought, do they, to the human rights conditions or the conditions being endured by people living in Gaza. Never a second thought, eh? Nikki Haley today speaking from Geneva. The time is 21 minutes past the hour. This is the Richie Allen Show for Tuesday, June 6th, isn't it? That's a red letter day in history, June 6th. A very quick break, back in a minute with plenty more and Marwa Osman.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
And welcome back to the program. So just to let you know, tomorrow's special program, tomorrow I'm going to be speaking with survivors of the USS Liberty. 50-year anniversary approaching. USS Liberty survivors on the program tomorrow in advance of the 50th anniversary. And of course, today being a red letter day in history, as Normandy landings, of course, today. Don't ask me to do the mathematics. Is it 63 years ago, is it? 63, is it something like that? I'm terrible. This is your Richie Allen Show. Marwa Osman is standing by. We're broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, TuneIn Radio, and richieallen.co.uk. Thank you so much for joining me as always. Love you and love your company. I mean it. No stick of fancy here. This is The Bravery. Saw these live at the Etihad Stadium in 2005. They were supporting UDOS. You too. Song called Honest Mistake. Marwa Osman next, talking about Qatar and much more on your Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com.
Sometimes
The bravery on the Richie Allen Show. Honest mistake. Let's get rid of that so we can have more time with our first guest today. She's been on the programme before. We're delighted that she's agreed to come back. She's doing a PhD at the Lebanese International University. She's been a television presenter, and she is a very shrewd political writer and commentator on Middle Eastern affairs. And she appears on many programmes. We often see her on RT, Press TV. She's been on with us before. She's in Beirut. And let's welcome back to the programme Marwa Osman. Marwa, welcome back. How are you?
I'm fine. I hope you are fine as well, Richie.
Really good, thank you. And thanks for coming back on. You're in the middle of Ramadan, right? Yeah. You're in the middle of Ramadan.
Well,
so,
actually,
go on.
Yeah, we're about to be half of Ramadan. But I'll just cut to the chase. I was excited to be on with you in the show. And as you know, that we have, for certain circumstances, we had to move it for like 3 days, I guess. And just what happened. And I just wish that you give me time to say what I'm up here to say, because I can tell you that I'm uncomfortable. I'm really saddened by what happened, and I want to tell you how I feel. So basically, as you prepared on Twitter and you said today that we have our guest Marwa with us and stuff, so I went to your Twitter profile and I saw some people talking about certain things that I didn't understand, because as you know, I don't I don't have the time to follow all shows and all episodes. So I started reading the tweets and people were saying about how you were bashing certain journalists, certain alternative media and independent journalists, and especially the 21st Century Wire, which, by the way, I write for them. I am a journalist for the 21st Century Wire. So I didn't understand anything. So I went to the episode, I downloaded it, and I listened to it, and I was majorly disappointed. Not by the fact that you are giving your opinion, you are entitled for your opinion, that's definitely fine, but by the fact that you were calling us narcissists for not going and talking to people who don't like or hate Assad. I'll tell you a news flash, Richie. I'm not about, as a Muslim Shia woman, to go to Idlib or to East Aleppo, where the terrorist white helmets were residing, who refused to even treat people who had open wounds when Aleppo was liberated, and other people who had even bullets embedded in their bodies. I'm not about to go to talk to head choppers just to give the end of day some sort of a relief for journalists who live halfway across the world. If you're really calling us narcissists for not doing the job that you think that we should, that you think that we should do, I'm really disappointed by the fact I waited. I did not
I don't think you listened to it, Marwa.
I'm really disappointed.
Did you genuinely listen to what I said?
I'm okay. Okay, just let me finish.
Well, hang on a second. You've made some serious accusations. Hang on a second. Hang on a second. Hang on a second. First of all, I wasn't referring to you. Okay?
Well,
I didn't mention you or anybody specifically.
The 21st Century Wire team, and you were talking about certain people go to Syria and say, look, we are in Syria. You know how much time these people spend just to get a visa to get inside of Syria? You know how much effort, how much money they have to save in order to come and go to, how much it is risky for them to go actually to take a taxi and go from one province to another, especially when they were not all fully liberated. You are telling us to go and talk to these terrorists at a time when these head choppers,
you didn't listen to a word I said,
from a mile away,
you didn't listen to a word I said.
Behead me, or they would take me as a sexual slave. The same people who made me and
are
my
you finished
two
now?
Children.
Can I interject
be
now?
Embedded in an explosion.
Can I was interject
two,
now? Are we finished now?
Away from an explosion. Let me finish, because I'm really disappointed and I'm really saddened about
you
this.
Said you're disappointed and saddened. I do understand that.
Let me ask you a question, Richie. Let me ask you a question.
Great,
let you
I'll get to speak. Okay? Good stuff.
Let me ask you a question.
Go
Why
ahead.
Why don't you come all the way over here and go talk to them? Why don't you come go to, I'll tell you, you cannot come to Syria and go to Idlib, because that would be the only way to go there is by a green bus. If you want to go on a green bus, that's okay. But the only way to get there is you go to Turkey, and then you have to be smuggled in to Idlib to go talk to head choppers who will see that you are a white male coming from Britain. So, hey, you are a bag of dollars for them. See, look, we either stand together, we either have our backs for one another, or we just don't.
Marwa, if you're going to be...
I was very happy that we are collectively making some sort of an effort.
Please, don't have me to cut your mic off. I've never done that before. Don't have me to cut your mic off. Please allow me to interject.
You want to cut my mic off
please,
now?
Allow me speak.
On your own show.
Allow me to speak. Please, calm down. And I would suggest if you plan to pursue a career in journalism that you develop a thicker skin. First of all, I didn't refer to you.
You
I didn't refer to anybody specifically. Let me finish.
I am living
let
in an
me
area
finish, please.
Inflicted by let terrorism.
Me finish, please.
I'm not going to let you patronize let me. Thank
me
you very
finish,
much. I'm never
please.
Coming on, on your show
let
again.
Let me finish, please. What an idiot. What an idiot. And this is, you see, this is the narcissism I was getting at when I was talking about this on the programme on Sunday, without mentioning her or anybody in particular. You know, talking about head choppers. The point I made on Sunday was there are people living in that country, rightly or wrongly, who don't support Bashar al-Assad, who don't support his government, would have long held opposition to the Assad family going back to his father and even beyond that. And I made a point on Sunday, which was well taken by most people who heard it, about the motivation of people like the some of the people who've been on this programme in the past who go to places like Syria and triumphantly proclaim themselves to be working for the greater good and challenging the narrative about Syria and about the Assad government and all of that. But in fact, are not doing that at all. In fact, are there and are there only. One of the things, you see, she rung off there because she wouldn't have been able to hold an argument with me when I challenged her about her contention that these people were in grave danger when they were in Syria. They were in no grave danger whatsoever. They had, as far as I understand, when these people go to Syria, they go to Damascus, they go to strictly government-held parts of the country, and they are well taken care of while they are there. Now, many of these people also report for Press TV and RT. That's what they do. The point I was making on Sunday, and I've made it before, is these people, many of them are virtue signalers. They are there to be seen there and to insert themselves into the narrative. It's called misomania. Okay, I explained this in great detail on Sunday, where the motivation is not to go to the country to try and understand what's really going on there, to get both sides of any story, but rather to signal or to signify to their following, small as it might be, that they are worthwhile. That's what misomania is. Misomania is convincing others of your worth and inserting yourself into the story. So this head chopper nonsense, what am I supposed to do? This young woman wants to be a journalist. It's why she's studying at the University of Lebanon. It is incumbent upon you, when you're in countries like that, to engage with those people who are not in the control of the United States or of Israel or of France or the UK, but who genuinely oppose the Assad government, genuinely oppose the Assad dynasty, rightly or wrongly. Right? Rightly or wrongly. To engage with those people and get them in a discourse about, well, how did these jihadis get to be in your country? You see, these are the people I really want to talk to. It's not easy to do that. I'd love to go to Syria and spend time there. I don't have the money. I don't know how these people get the money to go there. And if Marwa Osman wasn't a miserable coward and didn't hang up, I would have asked her to explain to me how people like Vanessa Beely and Patrick Henningsen and others get the funding to go to Syria and spend time there. Who's paying for that? See, these are journalist questions. Who's paying for that? Is it RT? Well, RT is Russian state media. They've got a vested interest in their reporters or their journalists, you know, following a certain narrative and saying certain things. And if it's not RT, who is it? Who's paying for these people? Is it the Assad government? And regardless of what you know or what you don't know about Syria, if the Assad government or RT are paying for these people to go to Syria and talk about the situation there, the reality of it, the white helmets and all of that. That, as a piece of, as a journalistic exercise, it is worthless in the eyes of the public. Well, you would say that. You're working for RT, or you would say that. You're being paid by the, you're being paid by the Assad government. So I'd have had a lot of questions for Marwa Osman if she didn't come on screaming like a banshee and then hang up and run away. These people have got to develop thicker skins if they want to be journalists. I've been making television and radio programmes for the best part of 20 years. I'll take anybody on any issue. I'll let them speak, I'll let them have their say, but I'll have my say. And I maintain the point I made on Sunday, and I'll say it again. Many of these people who operate in the Truther industrial complex exist to massage their own egos, to build their own profile. Something that has been called mythomania, convincing the world of your worth, of your own importance. How many times do these people tweet and post on Facebook about the attacks that they are enduring? How many times do you go on Twitter, and I've got countless examples because I've researched this really well, really well. How many times do these people take to the airwaves or to social media to claim that they are being attacked for what they do? How many videos are we going to see of people like Vanessa and others, you know, virtue signalling about the attacks that I'm enduring for the things I'm doing, and because I'm dropping truth bombs, and because I'm telling the truth about Syria? As journalism, it is worthless. It is worthless. Yes, it will always have a following, because unfortunately, the way things are, people will always buy into that, because a large percentage of people, I suppose, who listen to programmes like this want to be told that what they believe is right. They want affirmation from people like that. And these people are very clever. That's why I talked about the Truther conferences the other night, Sunday as well. These people move from one programme to another and one conference to another. And it's very uncomfortable, this, and people don't like hearing it. They've never liked hearing it. And they tell people what they want to hear. They never challenge them. And they never put themselves in a position where they can be challenged. Look at the conduct of Marwa Osman. Ran away before I could put the points to her that I made on Sunday View on Sunday Just Gone. Many of these people are mythomaniacs. They are frauds. They sell themselves as journalists when most of them couldn't even spell the word. What a waste of an opportunity when in Syria to not find, and she's a pathological liar when she says to find opposition to Bashar al-Assad, you have to go to head choppers. Garbage. Utter garbage. There are people in Damascus who oppose the Assad government. They're ordinary people, like you and like me. They're not going to shoot somebody or stab somebody to death because of political differences. If you want to find people like that, you can find them and you can engage them in discourse. You can speak to them about why it is they oppose the Assad government and let them talk. And then you can engage them in talking about how Syria came to be in the condition that it's in. That is a worthwhile journalistic exercise. Going to Syria, bragging about the fact that you're there, interviewing people who support the Assad government, isn't journalism. It isn't. And I couldn't give a shit what people think about that. I've been making programmes like this for so long. People contact us all the time and say they don't like things that we do or say, or guests that we interview. But that's fine. I've got a thick skin. A very thick skin. Been around a long time. I accept people's rights and right to disagree with me. But these people, and I'll give you a laugh, one of them wrote an email to David crying about it. David is like, what do you want me to do? Don't you believe in free speech? Doesn't Richie have the right to have an opinion? Why don't you engage with him on it? You know? That girl has a lot to learn. I forgive her because she's relatively new to the media, isn't very experienced. She's quite bright, I think, but she's done herself no favours coming on the programme screaming and ranting like a muppet instead of listening and engaging me on that which she disagreed with, which was my categorisation of some of the people that have gone to Syria from the UK and elsewhere to virtue signal, to convince their following of their worth. These are the same people urging people to vote for Jeremy Corbyn. It's all clickbait stuff, you see. And we've never had this conversation in the independent media. We've never done it. We've never had the balls to have this conversation. The independent media is worse than the mainstream media because it is full to the brim of with opportunists. Opportunists after your money. For nothing. There's a guy all over Facebook. Let's just say he's from Scandinavia. And he's got a Patreon account asking for money for the work that I'm doing. What are you doing? Every time something happens, it's a false flag or it's a hoax or it never happened. Send me your money. These people never engage with people who disagree with them. Never. They're terrified of anybody that might put a dent or might throw some light on what it is that they do, which is nothing other than serve themselves, ultimately. This is the reality. I think we'll have a conversation about this on Thursday. Thursday night is obviously election night. And I wasn't going to get a guest on Thursday. I was going to throw the programme open to you, the listener, anyway, on Thursday to talk about anything. We might get into this. I've been around a long time. I know I've said that already. It never came easy for me to make individual criticisms against people, because anybody who's worked in commercial or national media understands it isn't a done thing to mention another organisation and to criticise them for two reasons. One, it never reflects well on you. And two, people think, well, they're very, you know, they're scared of their competition. They're worried about their competition. Now, none of that is true. I don't have any competition here, and I am not competition for anybody else. I'm an independent operator. And I've said on this programme time and time again, the independent media is fair game, like it or not. And I said to somebody on Twitter today, I reject this, we're all in this together nonsense. No, we are not. We are not in this together. My motivation for doing this programme is to hear from people with credible stories to tell that can't get a foot in the door of a commercial radio or television programme. That's it. That's the mission statement right there. Not about me or my team or anybody else. It's about getting as big an audience as possible to listen to men and women who've got things to say that are vital and that could never be heard on local radio, television, national, whatever. But we have an independent media that is, it's almost becoming a parody of itself. It's so ridiculous. It's become as personality driven, even more so than the mainstream media. It is full to the brim with mouthpieces screaming from the rooftops about who they are, what they do, and their own self-importance. And people follow that for the reasons I gave earlier on, for the affirmation. for the affirmation. And when anybody asks questions about these people and how they operate and how they do what they do, those followers take it personally. And this is the narcissism. This is where the narcissism goes. When you take offense because somebody doesn't like that which you like, because you think it reflects on you and your own intelligence. It's insane. Hayden Hewitt's done some great work on this on the Live League show, on what's happening to the independent media. It's been hijacked by wannabe celebrities, virtue signalers, mythomaniacs, who exist only to serve themselves and their own agenda. And you don't have to like that. And you certainly don't have to agree with it. But I'll say it where and when I want to say it. So we started out 3 years ago on this programme. We interview some brilliant people, and from time to time, I say whatever it is on my mind, and I tell you now, as I told you yesterday, and as I told you last week, last month and last year, take it with a massive pinch of salt. Look at it for yourself, and make your own mind up. Simple as that. 13 and a half minutes to the top of the year. Very disappointing that rather than engage, she came on and she ranted and then hung up, which was her plan all along. I suspected something was going on today when she was being a bit cagey with respect to not answering messages that I was putting out on Twitter and stuff like that. I said, fair enough, if she's got the hump about what was said on Sunday, which wasn't about her, she's living in Beirut, fine, we'll deal with that. Didn't have the courage. Didn't have the fortitude or the courage. But I'm going to give her a break. I'm going to say she didn't have the experience to say, right, you're an idiot, Richie. Why did you say that? To which point I would have said, well, this is what I see going on. This is the damage I think it's doing. And it is doing nothing to advance the, I suppose, the real end goal, which is to get people who don't listen to programmes like ours and who think we are crazy, to get them to give us a second look. That's what it's all about. Journalism. Real journalism. You're in Syria, speak to everybody. Don't hide behind this head chopper's bollocks. Monumental bollocks. I know people in Syria from looking around social media and in a very voyeuristic way following people's pages. I know there are people in Syria living in Damascus, living elsewhere, who oppose the Assad government. They don't agree with violence, but they oppose, they have long-term problems with the system of government in that country. Engage those people. Real journalism would be to go there and immediately seek out those people. Because it's intellectually fucking lazy to go there and talk about what the terrible NATO countries are doing to them. We know that. We know. We know. We've known for years. We've been talking about it since 2009, 2010. Stop sticking your chest out and posting pictures of yourself on social media standing in Damascus. Stop doing that, you narcissistic fuckwit. Do some work while you're out there. That's journalism. That's real journalism. Speaking to people who disagree with you. Why do you disagree with me? You hate the Assads, do you? You hate his father. Let's talk about that. Let's have a good chat about that. And then let's talk about who this Islamic State are, where they came from. Who funded these people? What do you think about that? That's the sort of thing I want to see. Not people preening and boasting about themselves on social media. Mythomania, convincing their followers of their worth. Nobody's worthless. But as a journalistic exercise, what we see going on in that section of the independent media is worthless. End of story. That's my opinion on it. Back in a minute with some, back in a minute with more after this from Springsteen.
Can't see nothing in front of me. Can't see nothing coming up behind. Make my way through this darkness. I can't
feel nothing but this chain that binds me. Lost track of how far I've gone, how far I've gone, how high I've climbed. On my back's a 60-pound stone, on my shoulder half mile of line.
Just tweeted me and said, that's very loud, Richie. Not the discussion earlier. Not that it was much of a discussion. The music. Yeah, I think something has happened on the old settings there. I'll have to look at that a bit later on. Something else to fix. It's 5 minutes to the top of the hour. This is Tuesday's Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com. Fab Radio 2 in Manchester. Tune in radio and richieallen.co.uk. Just to let you know, USS Liberty survivors will be on the programme tomorrow. I'm not going to tell you too much about it. If you don't know anything about the USS Liberty, now's your opportunity to go and look it up. But the 50th anniversary is approaching. I think it's early next week. Big shout out to Phil Restino for putting that together. David and I are going to do something on Friday. Now, if I'm right, and I'm often wrong, it must be said, I think there's a good chance that the election is going to go very close on Thursday. So maybe by early Friday morning, maybe there won't be a result. Maybe there will, maybe they won't. Whenever there is a clear result, and there should be, then again, there, you know, if it's very, very tight, there might not be a result on Friday. But if there's a result on Friday, we'll do a program on Friday, either mid-morning or early afternoon. We'll have a look at what has happened, how it's gone down, and what the implications and ramifications are. So that's definitely happening on Friday. Thursday, I will open the phone lines on Thursday. There's no point in talking about election issues on Thursday evening. I could do something else, of course, that's non-political in terms of, I could do something esoteric maybe, but I think maybe we'll throw the phones open and we'll have a chat on a Thursday. So I'm going to take a very quick break. Coming up in the second hour of the programme, really looking forward to this, by the way, Johnny Vedmore wrote a terrific article in a publication called The Swamp. And it concerns the history of Theresa May's father. It's got a very colourful history, to put it mildly. But Johnny discovered that there's some sort of campaign, or there was, to minimalise his part in Theresa May's life. Somebody is trying to erase him from history, effectively. Really good article by Johnny. Johnny's a blogger and a musician, never been on the programme before. Got to give a shout out to Sean Bluer, who's a teacher and a friend of ours in Manchester. Sean sent me the article, in fact, read it, got in touch with him, and gladly he's agreed to come on the programme. So I'll take a very quick break. When we come back, plenty more. There's an enormous amount of comment on Twitter about the shouting match with Marwa Osman. I'm not going to read any of the comments out. I don't see any point in doing that now. I've moved on. I have nothing else to say on that, or her, or any of those people she associates with. I'll be back in a minute with more.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Great stuff. Exactly a minute to the top of the hour. The Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2 and Tune In Radio. Right, good stuff. Shall we take some more music, shall we, while we get Johnny on? I think we might just about do that. Keep the tweets coming in, by the way, at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. There's an issue with email. It's richie@richieallen.co.uk, but I'm struggling to bring it up during the programme. I'm having an issue with the... Is it the server or the company that manages that for me even? Here's some Blue Monday from New Order. Here's New Order and Blue Monday. And when we come back, Johnny Vedmore will be on the programme. Tuesday's programme. Good to be with you. I will say this, though. For some reason, Marwa Osman has blocked the show's Twitter page. So we're blocked from following her on Twitter, and I'm blocked from her Facebook page. You see the levels of narcissism we're talking about here. You see the level of infantilism, narcissism, childishness we're dealing with here. It's quite extraordinary, isn't it? You know, it's playing exactly into what I was talking about on Sunday and what I spoke about today. You don't chalk it down to inexperience. You chalk it down to narcissism. Extraordinary. We move on. It's exactly a minute past the hour. This is Tuesday's programme. The 6th of June 2017. Blocking us on Twitter. How incredibly mature that is, eh? Wow, back in a minute. Right, that's the extended 7-inch. Or is that 12-inch? New Order and Blue Monday on the Richie Allen Show at exactly 5 minutes past the hour for Tuesday, June the 6th, 2017. Delighted our next guest agreed to talk to the programme. Mentioned earlier on, our friend Sean Bluer, Manchester-based teacher and union delegate, sent me an article that he wrote recently for The Swamp, and it's an intriguing article. He describes himself as a human being, first and foremost, musician and blogger. Let's welcome to the programme Johnny Vedmore. Johnny, you're very welcome. How are you?
Hello, Richie. How are you?
I'm really well, and thanks for agreeing to come on. I didn't think, I thought you might not come on. I thought, you know, you might think I might be inclined to go down conspiratorial avenues with the article, but not at all. I think it's an excellent article. I wasn't aware. I didn't know very much about Theresa May's father, who he is and what he did and where he was, apart from him working in ministries, and that I didn't know very much else about him. So it was a terrifically informative article. You're a musician and you're recording at the moment. If I had I should have asked you for some music, because when I interview musicians, I always play a bit of their music. But today being a mad day, I didn't get around to doing that.
There'll be another time, Mr. Allen. There'll be another time.
There will be another time, Johnny. Yeah. Now, before we talk about that article, I'm guessing that you're very much supportive and supporting Jeremy Corbyn in the election on Thursday. What have you made, Johnny, of what's happened in the last few weeks? How the lead enjoyed by Theresa May and the Conservatives has whittled its way down to virtually nothing. What's been happening? What's going on?
That's been my prediction from before the election. In actual fact, if you go back to before the referendum, my prediction was that David Cameron would have to stand down afterwards, that there would be a new leader of the Conservative Party and they would have to have a snap general election. I couldn't see any other option for it, but I'm just amazed she decided to call a snap general election after triggering Article 50. That's what I'm truly amazed at, because she could have triggered the election and not had the risk of the failure that she's approaching right now, because I think this is heading towards hung parliament. We're looking at a territory where if the Conservatives get 310 seats or less, then it's going to be a case that no one can really form a government, and no minority government lasts very long in Britain.
No, it doesn't, Johnny, yeah, because it generally tends to fall apart very quickly. You only need to lose one or two MPs who need to walk away, trigger a couple of by-elections, and before you know it, you have chaos. You're absolutely right. The manifesto was suicidal, wasn't it? And if I am going to get conspiratorial, I can't understand where a Conservative Party manifesto is going when it's basically threatening its base, and its base being, you know, middle income, middle class, retirees with a few bob, to be saying, well, look, this is what we're going to do with social care and winter fuel, you know, payments and that. To me, absolute madness. How have you read that?
Complete madness, but it's almost coordinated madness. It's been coordinated madness from the off. If you noticed, all of the likely figures who you'd think would first step up to be leader of the Tory party, as soon as you had David Cameron stepping down, they stepped into the shadows very quickly. The reason being is that they need a scapegoat. Whoever was going to trigger Article 50 was going to be politically dead after that. There's no way that this can ever be remembered as a good thing. It can only be remembered as a different thing, and I think that the next 10 years is going to be the thing that obviously worries lots of people is the fact there was no plan from the off, so we're obviously entering into unknown territory.
You and I could agree there, because I'm very much in favor of the UK leaving the European Union. Mm-hmm. And not just the UK but every other country. And listen, I don't have any affiliations with any parties. When I used to vote, Johnny, I would have voted for Labour as well, you know, and I would vote for socialist parties, and I did in Ireland. I'm not going to get into it, but I've got I've got a lot of information that I've acquired over the years about, you know, the centralisation of power, where the European Union came from, why it was
indeed
put together.
Indeed.
And you'd probably agree with some of that, right? But where you and I probably agree, most of these people, particularly those who campaigned for the Tories. So the Tory MPs who campaigned to leave, their heart was never in it, Johnny, was it?
I don't think that any of them actually thought they were going to get the gift of being given that. The electorate almost like handed it over to him. Well, the other side, Remain, the Remain campaign with the idea of just scare everybody as much as possible, and that'll work because it's worked every time in the past. And I think if you look right in the past, everybody's wised up over the past two decades. People have especially with the internet, as it means people can understand evidence, understand what's being told to them, and understand when there's lies, and they're fed up of it. So they're trying to play this the normal political way, the way they thought they were going to win. Because I think they did really believe that they had done enough to Jeremy Corbyn to make him look like an evil terrorist sympathizer who's a clumsy old man who walks around like bumping into things all the time. But in actual fact, it was always going to be that as soon as the media had to show some form of lacking in bias, then it was all going to crumble away. Because quite simply, you're up against, if you're Jeremy Corbyn, all you have to do is say things that are honest and you're up against the wolf.
You know, what strikes me, you look at these people. I mean, the people who called that referendum last year, I mean, we're talking about some pretty dreadful characters. Mm-hmm. You know, without getting personal and without getting into gutter journalism, you know, we're talking about a woman who maybe should be facing trial for attempting to pervert the course of justice, as you alluded to in your excellent article. You know, Jeremy Hunt, another corrupt politician. I'm not going to get into all the HSBC stuff and Nicholas Wilson that we've been covering on the programme. But these are, of course, the people of austerity. These are the people of, we must cut essential and vital public services, which mean... Sorry, Johnny, go ahead, jump in, yeah.
It's almost a symptom of the past. Sorry, my cat's attacking me at the moment. It's almost a symptom of the past where they've been brainwashed so much in the 70s and 80s that you must be this way, we must be this way. And then they saw Blair being the same sort of staying on the right and getting into power, that they almost think that they're going to be able to get away with anything now. They're going to be able to get elected because they have won permanently, and the democracy thing is a constantly turning wheel that is going to kick them in the ass eventually. And Jeremy Hunt, I mean, if you talk about any Tory, you know they were always a nasty party. You've got David Cameron, when he first got into power, he only really first got into actual being Prime Minister because Gordon Brown was so bad. There was still enough support if Gordon Brown hadn't been there after the Blair years and they had made some sort of change that was relatively coherent, then I don't think that David Cameron would have gotten to power and they would have still been the nasty party off on the side.
Johnny, before we talk about the article and what you've uncovered about Theresa May's mm-hmm. father, which is very relevant to the Historic Child Sex Abuse Inquiry, I think, before we do that, I've become convinced through years of working in commercial radio, mainstream radio, and following these people around, that the system is so corrupt and so filthy that no one man or woman can change things from within it. The system is owned by central banks, right? I know you're going to argue with that.
If all you have to use is a dirty knife against something that's attacking absolutely. You. Then you use a dirty knife.
Can I ask you this, Johnny? Have you given any consideration to the fact that what we might be seeing are powerful forces who want to keep the UK and the European Union in some way sabotaging the nasty party? Now, I have no sympathy for them. These are dreadful, dreadful people. But as you know, a lot of people are wondering, they're seeing this as some sort of throne election, the way it's gone for the Conservatives. Mm-hmm. How do you see that?
It's hard not to get into the realm of conspiracies, and I'm not a conspiracy. I like evidence. I like to build evidence and let other people investigate it and look into it and see if they can work out more from it and find more evidence from it. I think there's a lot of powers working in both directions to pull the country apart. For their own means, because they know that a country that's devastated is going to be something that's easy to buy up. It's always been a successful thing that they've used before to keep everybody in power, and fear's not working so much anymore. So I think the only way to create fear is to actually have full poverty. And I feel that the whole There's something happening, and it's not only the one reason. It wasn't only things like Tory election fraud or the fact they were 20 points ahead in the polls that she decided to call this election. She also decided to call this election because there's things coming up that they know about. The people on the inside all know what's happening. I'm not saying some big grand conspiracy, but I can promise you that in 1936 they knew World War II was coming.
Can't wait to talk about the article. I mean, I've read it two or three times. Johnny's article, I've tweeted it out there, and it's on our Facebook page. I will tweet it again.
Thank you, Theresa, my friend.
No, mate, it's really good. Theresa May's father was Hubert Brazier. And it's very interesting. There's a line in the article which jumped out at me. I didn't know this, of course. This is what good journalism is about. You've come by this info and you've written about it. Not long after she became Prime Minister, people working for her began to request the deletion of web addresses linked to her father. Talk about that and give us the lowdown on who her father was and why you became interested in his story.
This is very interesting because someone actually contacted me yesterday and wanted to ask questions about the lack of knowledge about Wikipedia that apparently I had from some of my investigations in this. And I actually discovered a little bit more information from it because there is a bit in Wikipedia where it shows you the page has been removed and for what reasons. It doesn't show you the page. You still won't come up with the actual page of Hubert Brazier, who was Theresa May's father, but it will allow you to see who deleted it. And it was someone who wishes to be unnamed, apparently. It was a non. But it was also someone who's added a lot to Esperanto, to their articles about Esperanto. So that kind of, that's the investigatory factor of it. It kind of narrows it down to who could actually have been deleting it. And maybe there's someone out there who knows how to trace, someone who is much better than me at computers, who knows how to actually trace who delete or where something has been deleted from. I do remember that in 2015, there was articles deleted and they found out they come from in actual Whitehall, that the articles from Wikipedia had been asked and requested it to be moved from there or been changed from there. I would be interested to find, it would be interesting to find out if there was any further evidence of where that came from. I would say that the Hubert Brazier seems like just a normal everyday figure, so there would be no reason for it to hide. On the investigation, and what I tried to put together was his life, and his life is pretty low key. He's been through some amazing events. He went through the war. He was in the Community of the Resurrection, which later on were known for systematic child abuse. He was in Eastbourne during the time of Dr. John Bodkin Adams, who was a serial killer doctor, like the shipman of his era, and that's where Theresa May was born, in Eastbourne. And Eastbourne's a fantastically interesting place. It's rife with history, especially dark history, especially of that period. He worked as a chaplain of All Saints within the hospital. He lived in the chaplain house, and that's where Dr. Bodkin Adams murdered over 160 people, 130 of which over 130, he actually got them to put him in his will, in their wills. So he got money from all the different people, £1,000 here, in a day a lot, £500 here, etc. Brazier would have seen a lot. He ended up getting some big promotion at one point after all of the time in Eastbourne. He goes up to be a vicar of Enstone with Heythrop up in Oxfordshire, which is it's just down the road from Chipping Norton, where all of the posh people live and all the establishment really are. He lived a fairly normal life through there. The only records I could find was him doing funerals and weddings and births and etc. It wasn't like he popped up. He moved on to another vicarage where he wrote a little bit of a book about that place, about walking around there. And then he died in a car accident in 1981. where he came out from a central reserve and just stopped in front of a Range Rover. I don't know if there was anything Falco Rock Me Amadeus about that, because that's the same way that he died, is going in front of a bus and no one quite knows whether it was on purpose or not. But I think it just sounds like he was in a Morris Marina and it wasn't going well. He died in 1981, and what's intriguing for me is that I like to go back and find out who a person is by looking at how they were brought up, what type of people, what type of ethics and morals were given to them. Because I do believe there's a lot given to you by nature, but there's also a lot given to you by nurture. So knowing the people around somebody is the most important way to really understand and get an understanding on why she would be the woman she is, because she makes no sense. I mean, as soon as the election got called and some of her actions before, it just makes no sense. So it's extremely interesting, I thought, to have a look, see if I could find anything unique or interesting. And there were a couple of things that were really there were false trails, like her maternal grandfather got the last name of Barnes, and her paternal great-grandmother's got the last name of Barnes. So I did go off for a while trying to find out if she was related somehow inbred in the family and things. But there was nothing. There was no conspiracies, nothing like that. But there was so many pages that had been removed.
So many pages removed, but also so many incredibly interesting things. And let's just, first of all, put on the table. Johnny's a journalist. I'm a journalist. None of us, not me, not Johnny, are going to be making any allegations about anybody. However, there are some very interesting aspects to his career. When he went to the Community of the Resurrection Seminary School and joined the priests there, as you said, we know now, of course, that the sexual abuse of children there was commonplace.
You've got to make sure that people know it's like there was around a 10-year difference between the time that abuse started with the Verona brothers and the time maybe even longer than that, maybe about 15 years. But when you look around the life, I am not accusing Hubert Brazier of anything terrible. I wasn't expecting to find too much like that. But when you look at all of the places that all of the dioceses been in, there was lots of allegations of child abuse all over the place, and then lots of convictions. And it was, I wonder if the last generation, if Hubert's generation, if the people who were growing up then don't necessarily have the same openness that people have just got to admit to what's happened in the past. If you get what I mean, with for instance, Jimmy Savile, His victims are like, 45, 50 years old now, and they feel comfortable in the society that we've got to come out and say, this is what happened to me. Now, I've heard of some people who are talking about the things that happened in Chichester who were 80 years old, who were coming, only now they felt comfortable. So I think there was a lot of people who died, generations before who died, who never told their story. And there's lots of things that happened. It would be amazing to see that there was so much fire, not just smoke. There was so much fire around an area, and that no one can notice it's on fire.
Johnny Vedmore is on the line. We're talking about Hubert Brazier, the father of Theresa May, the Prime Minister. Fascinating that you said that, you know, trying to go down the road of finding out about her and getting into her family tree, that you come up against so many, you end up going down so many blind alleys where you can't go as far as you want.
A few people have already attempted to put her tree together, her family tree, in some sort of way that seems like it's somehow biased and leaves out certain information. So that's what also there was like little bits of clues. What I've really done is gone around and found all of the bits I possibly could about this guy's life and put them together in an order, because they're all around the place, but they're often disjointed, and someone says something that they'll concentrate on one side, but they just don't want to look at the other side very much of the family. They don't want to talk about it. But I think that there's a lot of people who would say that with family, when you have family, when you're around people all the time, you don't want to talk about their personal life. You don't want to, or their private life. You don't want to talk. You don't want to be talking about what other people do and what other people have experienced, whether it be good or bad. So I can understand as well that people want to kind of be respectful when they're looking at a family history.
You said he was around dioceses over the years that we learned then were, you know, where child abuse was going
rife,
on.
Rife. I mean, the Diocese of Chichester is just, I mean, the abuse that happened there for, that's known about for over probably about 30, 40 year period is incredible. The convictions, when it came up to the time of of people actually asking, we want an inquiry into establishment paedophilia links and the links within the clergy, one of the first things said was that we should probably do the Diocese of Chichester first, because the cases numbered in these were people who were bishops, these were people who were canons, these were people who were in real control of full communities and were left to cover up and do what they want for a very long time.
Talk to us about his relationship with Dr. John Bodkin Adams. This is fascinating stuff, this. I mean, this is really important stuff. This is the sort of stuff you see. You've written this article. You see, alarm bells go off that this hasn't been written about by the press in this country.
Yeah.
Because you found it, Johnny, you found it and you wrote about it. We're not trying to demonise or assassinate anybody, you know, none of that at all. But this is information of extraordinary interest to the public and to the electorate. And yet nobody has ever spoken about this. Her father knew and worked with John Bodkin Adams. Talk about that.
I cannot link two moments they were together. I cannot. But I can say that when you have he was responsible for 168 deaths. He signed the forms when they died. He signed the cremation. This is John Bodkin Adams. All of these moments were needed of the chaplain present for giving last rites, for being with the family, for caring with people. There is no doubt that a doctor within the hospital who was treating so many patients would have had a relationship with Hubert Brazier. Hubert Brazier would definitely had a relationship with John Bodkin Adams. There would have to have been something. And the thing that John Bodkin Adams says at one point is that a pressman asks him, do you think it's I also almost go into an American accent for this, but do you think that it's right that you've taken money from people's wills and you've signed a death certificate as well? And he said, I've you know, talked to God and I've asked for forgiveness for that, so that's okay. And it makes me think that as an Anglican Catholic in the hospital, as a hospital chaplain, if Dr. John Bodkin Adams claimed to be a man who was faithful at all, he would have had to go and see the chaplain at some point.
And you said, you know, it may, and of course you're very clever. You're not of course you're clever. You're being fair. You're saying, look, he may have taken confession from Bodkin Adams. Look, some people listening to this, and you know as well as I do, some people listening to this will say, there's no way that Brazier didn't know what Adams was.
Oh, everybody in the hospital, before Brazier got there, nurses had already said all around Eastbourne Hospital, there's something going on, and it had been covered up all of consistently. Or for the years before, 5-6 years before, it was definite cover-up happening. And the reason was the NHS had just been created. And it was a fear that if you prosecuted a GP or a doctor for anything that he could end up being sentenced to death for, where the death penalty existed back then you were likely to not attract any more doctors to this new flourishing National Health Service, which was, after 8 years of being around, by the trial was in real already funding problems, already had a funding crisis.
So we see, the question that has to be asked here is, you've outlined that this man spent a lot of time in dioceses where child abuse was rampant. He worked alongside a serial killer. We could talk about the fact that he married a woman who was given away by her father. He was listed as a traveller, whatever that means.
I find that fantastic.
That's
I
really
find that
interesting,
very interesting
isn't it?
Because I don't understand how he was a traveller, and I really want to look into this more because the Barnes, Reginald James Barnes, who's the traveller and the maternal grandfather of Theresa May, he just pops up all of a sudden and pops away again. He lives a normal life. I think they're from the family come originally from somewhere like Southampton, and they moved to Reading, and then.
So, what does traveller mean then, Johnny?
I don't think it means travel in the sense that we use.
As
it
in,
now.
It might be a gypsy. I think so. Could have been a salesman, maybe.
Yeah, I think in the same way that they used to say Turkey merchant back in the day, it was okay. Someone who was a merchant who went to Turkey rather than someone who sold turkeys.
It's just a fascinating story, and what's really important to remind our listeners is that Johnny's uncovered evidence that the people who work for and with Theresa May have made a concerted effort to prevent this information becoming known. And you're entitled to speculate, Johnny. We are entitled to speculate.
Well, I think it's just political. It's political tactics rather than an idea of conspiracy. Because I know a lot of people would turn around and say that was conspiracy, the idea that people have tried to cover things up. But I think it's just political tactics. She's come into power and they want to not have any questions asked. Now, I don't think necessarily there's anything there with Hubert Brazier. Maybe no one relates the name Brazier to Theresa May. So maybe there has been things said in the past that people don't even know they're it's related to Theresa May. And why should that even matter anyway? I don't think there's anything even remotely wrong with Hubert Brazier. I think there's something wrong with Theresa May.
Right.
I think there's an inability for her to even ask questions herself about the past. And
but Johnny, the thing is we don't know whether there was or was not anything wrong with Brazier. He was around some very, very bad people, and not once or twice. And people are, you know, people will always speculate on that. We're not the Sun newspaper or the Daily Fail here. So I'm not going to say what he was and what he wasn't, because I haven't a clue. But people will speculate about that. They will say, how could this guy be around so much abuse? How could he be, you know, around serial killers? And of course it's possible that the guy was an innocent bystander, you know, and it was the culture in the church as it was in Ireland, but people will be fascinated by that, and they will say, you know, they will make some tenuous link to that information and the child sex abuse inquiry. And to be fair, you do in the article, because you mention her, you know, to say the least, dubious appointments of Butler Sloss and Fiona Wolfe. I mean, scandalous, perverting the course of justice. Let's be honest about it.
It is literally one of the worst worst cover-ups possible, that you would just put people who are obviously related to some of the people who are alleged abusers.
Yeah.
That you would actually find some way to undermine, just as Trump would do in America. And for people not to notice and for people not to care that much, because it's about an inquiry about historic sexual abuse. It's not about inquiry about something happening now. So it's not so important. It can be put on the side always. But there's a load of people who want truth and have been denied evidence, because she obviously has been putting things in the way by appointing people who are obviously going to have conflicts of interest.
You know, it's bad enough to do that one time, but I will give anybody a pass, even somebody as detestable as the Home Secretary, the Conservative Party Home Secretary. And she is detestable. These people are detestable. Mm-hmm. This is not a personal thing. I don't know her, but what they have inflicted on people in this country since 2010 is detestable. And we can talk about that in a minute. It's all right to do it once. I will give anybody the benefit of the doubt and say, well, you made a mistake. To do it twice is perverting the course of justice. And if you or I did that, Johnny, if I knew that Johnny Vedmore had done something seriously criminal, and I had enabled you in any way that I could to, you know, avoid repercussions for that, that is a very serious charge. She's not fit for purpose as a human being, I would say, number one, as a Home Secretary, number two, and she certainly shouldn't be the Prime Minister. And I link that, you see, because you It's difficult. And of course, I've looked at your article for 2 days and I've cross-referenced stuff in there, obviously, and it is so difficult to find out a lot or anything really about Theresa May as a young woman or as a student or a young girl.
And even the press get nothing. Even to get a press,
yeah.
I mean, the press that are close to her, it's almost like she can say, "Oh, he died in 1981, and I don't want to ever talk about it ever again." But that doesn't make any sense. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. But again, should it make any sense? I mean, relationships, families, all the things that happen, do they make much sense? And she might love her dad loads and she might just have wonderful memories of him. But it's amazing how she could become such a woman, that's a person, a human that's easy to unlike, easy not to like. It's almost like she's the perfect patsy for the Conservative Party to put up when everything falls apart.
You think, and you conclude in the article, that as well as looking at Elm House, that the dioceses of Chichester, which you mentioned earlier, might be an area of interest for the inquiry, and that could be something that they might fear. You know, again, we're not saying her dad did or did not do anything, but
I think anybody who served in that diocese would fear exactly that, would fear an investigation into what happened in the past, anyone who served there, because all of the people who served were around these people at the time. In this area, you're not talking about just one or two. This is nearly every single home of a refuge of religion where something was happening. This is like one priest there affected 36 children. You know, it's that sort of scope, that when you actually times it by the amount of priests that were actually caught at the end of it and have actually been convicted. What about the ones that don't get convicted? What about the stories that get away? And it's really hard to track down any type of people's experience and people's side of the story, because often people need to get over these things afterwards and don't want to speak about them, which is completely understandable.
I'm going to speculate.
Go on.
She might have encountered sexual abuse herself. I'm going to say that. It might be wrong. And, you know, she is a human being, whatever else she is. And, you know, if the likes of this program ever came across her desk, I doubt it ever would. But if it did, you know, I could understand somebody taking offence at that. But I'm thinking about what we know about, you know, Margaret Thatcher's father, who was an abuser of young girls who worked for him in his shop. And I have no doubt Thatcher was exposed to child abuse. I have no doubt. You know, we know her father was a child abuser. And I wonder, was she exposed to it, May? I just wonder about that, you know. And you know, again, it's probably wrong to say it. And you are an evidence-based journalist / blogger. I would say journalist. I like to be as well, but I do like to throw things out there and say, look, who knows? You know, I mean, who knows? And I think there's a concerted effort to cover this up, Johnny. I mean, we talk about the child sex abuse inquiry. How could it have any credibility when the chairperson of it, the chairwoman of it, of course, won't have access to people that she'd like to have access to? And I'm thinking of people like HRH, the Prince of Wales, mm-hmm. who I'm not ever going to suggest was ever involved in anything, not at all, but he was the best friend of Jimmy Savile. Yeah. And he hung around with him for years and properly hung around with him. So as a policeman, I'd say, listen, sir, this might be embarrassing for you, but I'd like to have a chat with you. But that's never going to happen, right?
There's some big questions that a lot of this generation of, I would say, conservatives, maybe even liberals, and probably some of Labour, would have to ask about the past and what they found acceptable. And then we've got to work out that, you know, when you say she could be a victim of sexual abuse, well, she could, because it's something like 1 in 4 women by the time they reach a certain age have had some form of sexual abuse or sexual harassment or etc. And that's of what's reported. So you can imagine that if that's how it is now, when it was worse and unreported, it would have been much more rife because people knew they could get away with it. I have experiences myself with organizations and how they like to hide things like this, because quite simply, it makes sense for people of that generation to hide sexual abuse, even if it wasn't them who was doing it.
Johnny Vedmore is on the line. We've got Johnny for another 5 or 6 minutes. We will tweet links. Follow Johnny on Twitter. It's very simple, at Johnny Vedmore. That's a V-E-D-M-O-R-E. I used to know the phonetic alphabet, Johnny. I think that's Victor Echo, and then I'm gone then. Delta, I suppose. M-O-R-E. Terrific stuff. This is a terrific article, asking questions. It's fair. It isn't in any way, you know, you're not uncomfortable reading it. You know, he's not making up stuff about people and throwing mud at people. It's a very good article. Johnny, do you believe... I believe, but it doesn't matter what I believe. You're entitled to your beliefs as much as me or anybody else. Do you believe that the levels of child abuse within establishment circles are far, far greater than most people can fathom? I'm thinking of the former whip who worked for Edward Heath, Tim Fortescue, who said it was commonplace for MPs to come to the whips for help to get it, to, you know, to get them off investigations where they were being investigated for being with small boys. Do you think the scope of this is beyond the grasp of most people?
I don't think that, and the police say it quite openly, that people do not, the average member of the public really does not realize how bad the situation has been in the past and may still it may still be. So I'm when I think of 1 in 4 women, I think that maybe that's like 1 in 10 men abusers. Maybe that means that there's every 10th house there's a man who's an abuser, but in most houses there's 3 men or etc. And then you calculate it up and you realize that in actual fact all around us, not, and this isn't something to be scared and worried about, but we should be aware that there's people who prey on other people, whether they be children or whether they be adults who are vulnerable in any way, shape or form, or whether they be just a stupid person. There's people always looking to prey on them.
Do you think there's pretty dark forces at work trying to keep this under wraps, do you think? I think it's obvious, right?
I would say that every time I've investigated anything, it always ends up leading back up to London somewhere. I feel that there is such a history that will eventually come out. I mean, you talk about Ted Heath, and it's really hard to not cringe and think, why hasn't anything actually been talked about openly? Because they have managed to openly cover up things, and we don't often question it, because the people in control are still in the generation where the culture existed and haven't really come out of that culture.
No, they haven't. Do you know what, Johnny? I've got to throw this in there. You know, when I've been involved with David for years now. I started interviewing David Icke on the radio many years ago, and I was pretty dismissive of David's theories on the nature of reality and, you know, where we come from and that.
Yeah.
But I always enjoyed speaking with David. We became good friends and are to this day. In 1998, David wrote a book called The Biggest Secret, and it was an evidence-based book, and he named people like Peter Morrison and Edward Heath. He'd interviewed a lot of people in Jersey, and people had come forward, and Heath was alive at the time. And, you know, it was very clinical what David wrote about Heath and what he was doing. And it was put in front of Heath what David had said, and Heath didn't respond at all. He just dismissed it and wouldn't give any comment on it. You know, people at the time, I think, who knew what was going on were waiting with bated breath to see would Heath, you know, take some action against them, against David. And then you have Michael Shrimpton and others. And, of course, Shrimpton gets dismissed as a madman, because he talks a lot about the Germans and spies and all of that. But there's no doubt that Edward Heath was abusing boys in Jersey, and there's no doubt that Jimmy Savile was supplying him with those boys. And I think, and then I'll shut up and get your opinion, the establishment is terrified of that coming out, Johnny, because people will surely reject the status quo, will reject the paradigm.
I think it's worse than that.
Do you think so? Go ahead.
I think the people will not reject the paradigm. That they will say that was in the past and just continue on the path, knowing that it's probably still happening in some way, shape, or form. I think that's how people have been in the past. That's how people will always be until a lot of our... One of the big things I think in that we're not facing in the world, and I wrote an article about this the other day in the same place in the Swamp Media, where it's obvious that everything that relates to terrorism, all the negative things in the world, all the child abuse, etc., it all comes from unresolved mental health issues. All of this comes from the fact that someone is not evil, not the thing necessary. I think they've just got issues, and no one, because they never get sorted out, they go on to do terrible, awful things. And I think while we turn around and blame everything try and give people the motivation by maybe what groups they associate with terrorists or with politicians, etc., I still think it comes down to we're failing all of the time to help people on an early stage to stop them being abusive to other people later on.
I can agree with that up to a point, Johnny. I think it's a point well made there. There's no doubt about that. But I think, I've spoken over the years to many people, not just David. I had a very well-known psychotherapist from Canada come on the programme called Sandra Fecht and others, who talk about very sinister aspects to this. You know what I'm going to say now? The satanic element of this. I think you're right. I think you've described, I suppose there are types of people who abuse children. And, there is some truth, I think, to somebody who grows up in an environment of abuse where they might be abused. There is some truth maybe in that. And a lot of victims would probably get very upset and say, well, it's not Richie, I would listen to them. I was violently abused when I was younger, not sexually. I was very, I was seriously violently abused.
I'm with you. I was there.
I couldn't imagine, I don't have any children. Please God, I will. I couldn't imagine laying a hand on a child. I couldn't imagine laying a hand on, a defenseless child who can't.
Well, I look back as an adult now on abuse that I seen when I was younger and what I experienced when I was younger, and think, how would a man do that? How would a man do that? That's not a man. That isn't. There is no. And then you think about all of the things where you separate them from being in the actual world and etc. But in the fact is that we've all got the capability of doing horrible things.
I agree. We've had loads of tweets on this, by the way. People can follow what's happening on Twitter. Go to twitter.com. It's Richie Allen Show, all one word. Follow Johnny at Johnny Vedmore. I heard things years ago, Johnny, that I dismissed as lunacy. And we do that, don't we? We dismiss things as lunacy because we can't understand them. And then I started looking into them, the prepubescent energy of children and what that means to some of these sickos. Mm-hmm. And I found that there's some truth to that. And that's so sinister, Johnny. It's beyond the scope of most people. It's beyond the scope of me that there are people out there doing stuff like that,
Whilst investigating, what I've discovered is that I've got to keep focused, because every now and again, when you look down any bad alleyway, the same names come up, the same conspiracies come up, the same evil people or supposedly evil people are standing right there in the past, in the same places. And I keep having to discount these people. I keep having to take them out because there's enough people shouting about them that no one's going to listen to the truth on them. I think it's really important to actually just try and build towards the evidence that you can find and kind of leave the stuff that's going to be too hard to explain for the person after you've put all the evidence together for them to look at.
That, I understand that, but that goes against every fibre of your being as a journalist, doesn't it? Because, I look at this particular show and we've done all right in 3 years. We do get a lot of people listening who... generally think from the outset, they think, well, these guys are crazy, they're into conspiracy theories, but they listen because of the way we present it. We're very serious about how we present it and what we do. Mm-hmm. But and it has occurred to me before, because it's that audience that I want to try and get to consider some of this information, people who get their info from the BBC and Channel 4. And I've thought before about, well, not talking about satanic stuff and stuff like that, because it'll, to some extent, scare people off, and they will dismiss everything out of hand. But it goes against every fibre of my being, because very credible people have continued to come forward to talk about their experiences with some of this stuff that's so heinous. It's dreadful, Johnny. But I do understand what you're saying. I take
indeed,
your point,
I,
you know.
I do, but there's like certain elements. For instance, like Jimmy Savile, I don't think he was a wizard. I think he thought
no,
he was a wizard.
No, yeah, yeah.
But he, fair you enough, know, yeah. People actually believe their own myths. So a lot of these people in the past, their ideas, what we see later on and how we build their world later on, is much different to what they actually were doing or experiencing themselves.
Just before we go, just to go back on what you said, you think that, I mean, you agree about the scale of it, but you think a public who eventually understands it are so, not so much apathetic, but they're so beaten down and so tired that they will just carry on as normal. It's not going to
I think
ultimately
it's a psychological
damage.
Process. It's a psychological process that goes off to protect you. And it's within all of society. It's Milgram saw it. It's the deference of bad things to other things. And then you can walk away without a guilty conscience.
Folks, go to theswamp.media. You'll find Johnny there, and you can follow him on Twitter. It's at Johnny Vedmore. Great work on the history of Theresa May and her father and his interesting experiences, Johnny. It's a great food for thought, and thanks for coming on the programme.
Thanks for having me.
Anytime, mate. You're very welcome. Come back anytime. Johnny Vedmore on the line to us there. I think Johnny might be in Cardiff. He's in Wales. Johnny, are you in Cardiff?
I am. I'm a Cardiff boy.
You're a Cardiff boy. Good man. Just let me make sure I didn't get that wrong. Cheers, mate. Thanks again.
Excellent. All right.
And bye for now. Yeah, Johnny's in Cardiff. Theswamp.media, and it's at Johnny Vedmore on Twitter. Very quick break. When we come back, it's close to wrap-up time. Rapidly approaching Thursday's general election, which, while I'm not a hypocrite, I continue, you know, my belief hasn't changed. It ultimately won't matter what happens and who forms a government. But the way this is developed is intriguing me, and of course the European Union and Brexit. So I'm intrigued. Back in a minute.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Welcome back to the programme. Yeah, it was really good stuff from Johnny there. Good to hear him talking about Edward Heath. It's an interesting one, that, because when I meet with people who are relatively new to this type of information, and I chat with them, and it's not very often. I'm a bit reclusive. I'm kind of a private person. When we have any free time, we tend to spend it with one another, and we tend to get away from things. But when I do meet people and they are relatively new to this information, they do draw a blank at the idea that a serving prime minister might have been or was abusing young boys, and that they were being delivered to him by Jimmy Savile. Haut de la Garenne, look it up, Jersey, the boys' home, and people can't get their heads around that. And I've always believed that there's generally great goodness in people, I think. Even those that we deride when we see them glued to their smartphones and glued to television and we think they're apathetic. I think deep down in most people, there's goodness. So I kind of disagree with Johnny. I think when people do understand the depths of this paedophilia, what's really behind it, the satanic element that I chatted with Johnny about there, and You know, he makes a valid point that it's very difficult to get that. It's very difficult to get that on the agenda. It's difficult for people to entertain that. But we're going to do it anyway. Because, and this is in no way to criticise Johnny. I think he's excellent. You have to follow the information wherever it leads. Somebody once said that to me. And I think they're absolutely right. Wherever it goes. And when psychotherapists and counsellors are telling you from all over the world that their patients are talking to them about these experiences, and these experiences mirror the experiences that other counsellors are hearing from patients thousands of miles away, you can't ignore it. So I still think that whenever there is an acceptance of it, the depths of it, who's really behind it, and the sheer horrors of what goes on, I think it will be a watershed moment for people. Because people are good enough. Now, I accept Johnny's point, and I might be wrong. Johnny might be right. You know, people might take that, they might take the view, well, that was then, but this is now. And if Johnny's right, that'll be tragic, because these things are going on all the time as we speak. 3.5 minutes to the top of the hour. I'm going to leave it there. A big thanks to Johnny Vedmore. Real shame, and this will be my final word on it, real shame that our first guest wasn't mature or courageous enough to engage in a conversation and to take questions from me on the rant that she had when she came on. That's a tragedy. She's gone and blocked the Twitter feed for the programme and blocked us on Facebook. Incredibly immature. It is certainly not the behaviour of a journalist, and it does her cause no good whatsoever, because I remain convinced of everything I said on Sunday View. And I say to you again, whether you are uncomfortable with it or not, start looking very hard at the heroes of the truth or industrial complex and their motivation for doing what it is they claim to do, and challenge them as robustly even, as you would challenge the Daily Mail or the Sun. Everything should be on the table. Everything should be up for debate. Freedom of speech means freedom of speech all the time, not when it suits you. And I'll be damned if I'm not going to comment on the behaviour of the independent media because of some faux belief that we're all in it together. We're not all in it together. Far from it. I'm only interested in hearing from men and women who've got things to say that are important, that challenge establishment thinking. And we'll always do that. It's not about me, it never will be. I am nobody and I represent no one. I'm a guy who likes a conversation. And I like to talk with people who disagree with me. And I try to do that as much as I can on this programme. Get as many people as I can on with different opinions on events, because it makes for better radio. And if we don't engage people whom we disagree with, we will descend and disappear into a quicksand of self-censorship and the sort of nonsense we got from Marwa Osman in Hour One. That's it for Tuesday's programme. Look after yourselves and one another. It'll be on podcast real soon, and I'll be back with you tomorrow, Wednesday, at 7 p.m. British summertime. Not that we have much of a summer. I've been Richie Allen. Stay with davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, and richieallen.co.uk. Bye now. See you tomorrow. They paid paradise and put up a fucking lie with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you got till it's gone? They paid paradise.